For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Well, let's call this learning to live well. That's really what the Proverbs are all about. Skill at living. Yeah. We'll start right at the beginning, 1:1, with the kind of the prologue of the book of Proverbs. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, David's son, king of Israel. Well, they're not all Solomon's, actually. This is a collection. It's clear that there are several different authors. They're named at different places. But the title of the book are the Proverbs of Solomon. So that's what this is. We notice that he says about himself that he's David's son and that he's king of Israel, which puts him directly in the center of the covenant people of God. Solomon is a man of covenant. He's speaking out of the covenant between God and his people. And so his point of view, that's what comes to first to light here, is that we have to consider, we're listening here to men, to wise men, who are coming from a particular perspective. He doesn't, in this book, he doesn't appeal to Moses, like he's not like it says in such and so or whatever. But his worldview is Mosaic. That is, it comes from that covenant that God made with the people of Israel at Sinai under Moses. Every facet of what is taught in the book of Hebrews reflects that, or book of Proverbs reflects that. Proverbs, like one scholar pointed out, is made up of things that are too small to get hit with the broadside, you know, of the prophets, and too fine to be caught in the mesh of the law. A lot of these things are details of life, small things that add up and result ultimately in your way of life. When we look at the prophets in the Old Testament, Moses was a prophet, and then of course the other writing prophets, there were prophets would get visions from God. And God talked when you think of Numbers 14, where he told Moses and Miriam and Aaron, if there's a prophet, I'll speak to him in dreams, visions, and dark sayings. And Moses was extraordinary because he saw God face to face, it says. I speak to him face to face. There are visions. There are also auditions, though. That means that it's not just that they're seeing. They're actually hearing words. So it's not that the man sees a vision and then uses the word of man to describe his vision, but rather that he uses the word of God to interpret the vision. In the book of Proverbs, we have neither of these things. Rather, we have the sage, the wise man, looking out at the created order, but looking at it through, informed by the worldview, the Mosaic worldview, the biblical worldview, and informed by faith, and with that understanding that, you know, we do live in a created world. We are beings who were created by God in his image. And by setting the stage with the proper backdrop of theology, then when you go out and look at the particulars of the created order, you see that things are a certain way, and wisdom comes from understanding that and living accordingly. So we can think of an Epicurean, you know, the pleasure seeker, a hedonist would say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. The sage would say, eat, drink, and be merry because it's a gift of God. Same details, but the perspective, the point of view you take on it, super different. And so it's just a greatly different message. And so it's this way in one way after the other throughout this book. Their purpose, that is the purpose of these proverbs, these sayings, is to teach people wisdom and discipline and to help them understand the insights of the wise. And so we're teaching people wisdom, and this is a very central word used more in Proverbs than all the rest of the Bible put together. In Hebrew, chokmah, wisdom. It's a word that really means skill. And so you will see, for example, in the book of Exodus, that they selected men who were skilled at embroidering and sewing, and who could create cloth out of flax and so forth. And it describes them as skilled artisans that built the tabernacle. Or you could go to the book of Jonah, where the sailors in the boat that's floundering, it says, when they were at their wits' end, that's at the end of their chokmah, they had reached the limit of their skill, that's when they despaired and decided to throw Jonah overboard. Well, it also, so you can be skilled at different things, different, you know, skills that people have. But this book is about being skilled at the art of living. And that's really what Proverbs could be. That's a pretty good description of what this book is all about. Primarily, we're talking about skill in the relational area and in the spiritual area. So, you know, a lot of Proverbs is about how to relate to people, how to relate to your family, how to build a good family, how to relate to friends, how to choose friends, and also, you know, how to handle your finances, things that you learn to avoid, how to build your relationship with God and to benefit from His instruction. Those are the kinds of skills that we're talking about. When we think of a carpenter, you know, carpenters understand the properties of wood, and a real master carpenter, you know, really understands types of wood, grains in wood, the way wood is going to behave, and his skill is shaped by that. It's pretty much that way, you know, if you were a surgeon, you would have to know the human body to an extraordinary degree. You would be studying, anatomy. Yeah, you'd be studying anatomy forever. You'd be chopping up your cadaver and everything to learn, you know, the mechanics of the body. The more insight you have into how that body and how those organs work together and so forth, those systems, the more that's going to enable you to be skilled in surgery. And so to understand how to live skillfully, you got to understand people, and you got to understand the created order and realize we live in a certain type of world. A lot of foolishness, a lot of the reasons people end up being foolish is they just haven't faced the facts about the way the world is, the way it was created. And they're living, and they haven't faced the fact about what people are either. And so they're living in a way that kind of denies what is true, and that's what is leading to the problems in their lives. So to study, to be a thinker, and to be a prayerful considerer of the structure of life and of the world is necessary in order to develop wisdom. I was listening to Bruce Waltke, a scholar on this. He's probably one of the world's leading experts on Proverbs. He was talking about going down to the Wright brothers' home. He took a tour at the Wright brothers' home, and they had a bicycle shop, you know, attached to their house and stuff. And he mentioned something that I had never heard before, which is that in their bicycle shop, they had a little crude, you know, but working wind tunnel. And he said that, you know, he had always thought, and I thought this too, that when they took that plane out and launched it, you know, at Kitty Hawk, they were kind of, you know, fingers crossed, didn't really know whether, but in fact, they absolutely knew that that plane would fly because they had run these tests. They understood the properties of the way the wing needed to be shaped and everything else, and they had tested it out. And so it's really, we can be in this position ourselves. It's, you know, life is not like random. We're not in there are aspects of it that are random, but there is also a created order that is quite identifiable and understandable, and it leads to key conclusions that are known as chokmah, as wisdom, understanding that and knowing what to do about it. And therefore, the word of the sage is not just one man's opinion, but is actually equated and put on the same level as law itself. Not the law of Moses, but rather law like in the law of gravity, you know, or the law of motion. It's something that you violate. If you try to violate it, you'll just break yourself. That's all that'll happen. Jesus is said to have chokhmah also in the Old Testament in Isaiah 11. It says, then a shoot will spring from the stem of Jesse. A branch from his roots will bear fruit. The spirit of the Lord will rest upon him, the spirit of wisdom, chokhmah, and understanding. And he will not judge by what his eyes see, nor make a decision by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he will judge the poor and decide with fairness for the afflicted of the earth. And so here you see a dimension of wisdom which is looking beneath the surface. You know, there's a surface presenting situation, and the wise person has learned to look through that and beneath it to underlying cause. And also has a standard, has something called righteousness, that is knowing the difference between right and wrong as God declares it, by which to assess and judge what is going on and to know, you know, what the right thing to do would be. This word discipline, or some of your versions read instruction, which I think would be more accurate. In fact, 4 out of 5 times that the word musah is used in the Old Testament, it's referring to not discipline in the sense of self-discipline. This is discipline in the sense of a parent raising a child. Like we have a similar word in the New Testament that's often translated discipline, but it really just means to disciple, to train. And so this is talking about instruction or correction when you're wandering off wrongly, getting you corrected and back on the right path again. And their purpose is to teach people wisdom and instruction and to help them to understand the insights of the wise. And so we have the notion of understanding. Yada. Back with Aristotle, you know, in his thinking, he would try to distance this subject from the object of study. His whole thing was to try to be as objective as possible, analytical, and not to let yourself and your biases get caught up in that in any way. That's not only not Hebrew thinking at all. In Hebrew thought, it's more by far than simply cognitive thinking about things, identifying things. The fact is that you have to live it before you truly comprehend it. So there's a very subjective aspect to understanding in this context. Think of Jesus speaking in the New Testament, quoting Isaiah 6:10. This is also in Matthew 13, where he talks about, I'm not telling these people what my parables mean. Because he says, otherwise they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and return and be healed. See, you see with your eyes, you hear with your ears, but you understand with the heart. It's with the heart that you understand. And so this is not really just a cognitive, yet it does imply knowledge and cognition. That's part of it. But it goes way beyond that. And to understand what it means to really understand the ways of God. To understand God is a matter that is has to include experience. One of the illustrations Wolke used again in his lecture on this, which is quite good, is how he was he was asked to teach at Harvard, and most of his students were non-Christians. They didn't know God at all, didn't believe in God. And so he realized that because of the way they had positioned themselves, it was basically going to be impossible for them to grasp the Proverbs. And he took a student and had a student stand up in front, and he had them, you know, call out what they saw, what they observed about this student and so forth. And so all they could do, of course, was look at the external, you know, the height, the physical properties and so on and so forth. And you came to, and you started to realize they were not in a position to know this guy, because they were only able to look at it from that outward analytical position. And that's not knowing someone. To know someone has to come from, that's when you know them in an inward way through experience with them. Well, we'll see a little bit more about this later. To receive instruction in wise behavior, so that's another purpose, is to receive instruction in wise behavior, to help them do what is right, just, and fair. And I'd urge you, if you're reading along and want to do some reading in Proverbs with us, get a couple or three different versions side by side and compare how they translate. It's very enlightening. You can see what they're doing. And I'm gonna pick the one that I like the best. They're not my translations. These are all, but you know, for instance, I think NLT completely missed it in verse 3. These proverbs, he says, will give insight to the simple and knowledge to the youth. Well, the youth, insight. Oh yeah, insight. That's what we're talking about with that, with understanding. This is a word that primarily means to listen carefully and to be attentive, to carefully observe and consider what the sage is saying. And so that's a big stress in this book, is being able to hear and consider and not being the kind of fool where stuff just sails over your head. You're really not attuned to it at all. The same word, haskil, used in Psalm 41:2, happy are those who think about the poor. It's dwelling, it's pondering, who are troubled. You know, you're troubled by the poor, and so you spend time thinking about it. I wonder why there's so many poor people. How can we help? So you internalize the teaching of the sage, and that then makes you a deep person instead of a lightweight. Here's another interesting observation from Waltke. He's pointed out that very little emphasis in Proverbs put on self-discipline, trying harder, you know, works. The biggest emphasis is really on receiving the words of the teachers. And the thought seems to be that the only time he really dwells on the imperatives of do, do, do is when he's addressing the sluggard, who is a type of fool who refuses to do anything. But for the most part, the teaching seems to be indicating that if you really receive the word in a deep way, it will change you. It has a life-changing power. And so God will work to change you if you will just listen and think deeply about the wisdom of the wise. Two words are used here in parallel. The first, or that this one, is na'ar, which just means a young person. It's not pejorative. It's not negative. But the other word here, simple, is pejorative. This is one of the five or so types of fool in the book of Proverbs. This is the word piti, the simple-minded, or some translations translated as the simpleton. A simpleton, simple-minded person. It's, first of all, somebody who's easily persuaded. It's like a child, you know, you can talk them into anything. They'll believe you. And so this is often translated as the naive. These are people that are naive. They're oversimplified. They're not alert to you know, the things that are coming at them. They don't know why bad things are happening to them. The petit realizes all these bad things are happening, but can't connect the dots between it's because of my way of life. It's because of the fact that I'm living in an unwise way, and that's why I'm feeling so much pain. And so we'll see the same person, you know, for instance, get ditched, let's say, by a man or a woman, a lover, and crushed, you know, annihilated by that, and then they'll go right back to that same type of person again and again and again, and you realize we've got a petit on our hands here. It's like just no learning, unable to benefit from the negative or positive things that happen to you because you're a thoughtless person. So open-minded that his brains are falling out. Chapter 14, verse 15, the naive, the petit, believes everything. But the sensible man considers his steps. Yeah. So dangerously naive and badly in need of instruction. This is not one of the worst, you know, the most baleful, awful types of fool in the book of Proverbs. It's actually at the bottom of the list, and they ascend in awfulness the further you go. The petit is probably the least awful, and because he's really just naive and foolish in a childish way, and he needs instruction. Well, if he doesn't get instruction, though, he's in a lot of danger. So what you think of in chapter 7, he says, among the simpletons, among the naive, is a young man lacking sense, and he's the one that follows the prostitute down to her lair. He says he doesn't realize what's happening until an arrow pierces his liver. You know, I think metaphorical. Some people think that the prostitute lured him into a gang that robbed him. It's possible, but that's not necessary. I think that anyone that would you know, allow themselves to be seduced into something like that is obviously a fool or naive. They think they can do this and it won't hurt. He says in verse 5, let the wise listen to these proverbs and become even wiser. Let those with understanding receive guidance. By exploring the meaning of these proverbs and parables, the words of the wise and their riddles. So here again, it's more of this picture of be somebody who really, you know, is looking in like somebody, you know, stooping to look into a cave to try to see what's down in there. We have to ponder and exert effort to really comprehend and apply the wisdom. Here's a great passage in the next chapter where he says, tune your ears to wisdom and concentrate on understanding. So you can tell this is not something that's just done on the fly, that's done to the casual passerby. This is something that really, you know, tune your ears to wisdom, concentrate on understanding. Cry out for insight and ask for understanding, ask God. Search for them as you would for silver, seek for them like hidden treasures. Then you will understand what it means to fear the Lord and you will know God. So this is really what's at stake here. It can be that extreme. If we understand the created order and the way God has developed the world and our place in it, it's terrifically insightful right down to the point of being able to relate to God and to know God. It's that. It can be that deep. If you're going to study any subject, it's important to take, you know, to use the right tool in that study. You know, like if we had an orange up here and we wanted to study it and we took a hatchet out and began chopping it to pieces, you know, I doubt you would learn very much except for that it's juicy and it sticks, you know, sticky. It's just not the appropriate tool for studying something like that. If you got, on the other hand, a paring knife and started to peel it back and dissect it, it would readily disclose itself to you, and you would see all the parts there. So, too, then, you know, if we were going to study the moon, we would want to know math, physics. We would want to know that it's best observed through the lens of a telescope rather than the lens of a microscope. And so it would be in every area of study. It's always necessary to bring the appropriate tool to that study. We learn in Scripture that God has hidden himself, that he is not just out there like the front page of the newspaper that anyone can understand and read, that actually God is back where only those who do like we read there in 2 strive to know him, who apply themselves, who plead and cry out for understanding are the only ones that are going to come to know God in that deep way. I already told about the student. And so when it comes to the Proverbs, we have to come in Scripture in general. It's necessary to come humble and broken in spirit. And frankly, this is one of the things that the petit and the even more serious Avil lack. Verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Well, it's interesting that scholars that study Old Testament Proverbs have identified that this is a genre of literature that is found in many countries in the ancient world. In fact, this securely dates these Proverbs to a very ancient time in the 1000 BC range, 1000 to 800 range, because that's when we can date the Proverbs of Egypt, even earlier, and other Near Eastern countries. And it's funny, they follow very similar forms. So the just like if you were to sing today, you know, if you were to do a blues number, that's a pretty prescribed pattern, a type of music genre that has to follow certain rules. And Proverbs are like that. Now, the content of Hebrew Proverbs are quite different than the neighboring nations. But the literary form is very similar, especially, for instance, this introduction is a dead ringer for another piece, a couple of other pieces that we have from Egypt. So this was, they were being a part of their culture when they wrote this way. But interesting, verse 1 through 6, which matches up exactly with Egyptian wisdom, verse 7, we find nothing parallel to that in any ancient Near Eastern Proverbs. It's uniquely Hebrew perspective, that the beginning of the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's your relationship, and of course, you know, they're using the word fear here in the sense of respect, reverencing the Lord, realizing who He is. And that is the beginning of knowledge. We talked about this when we were studying Ephesians, how reasoning out from yourself always goes in circles, really can't tell you anything objective. The only thing you can tell is what's there relative to me. Whatever that means, it's different for everyone else since everything is relative to them. And so we can never reach any, we can't answer the big questions. And so reasoning out from self is antithetical to this, which is that the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord. And we reason from that absolute, that infinite personal God. And that's how we can attain knowledge that is actually not relative, but is real. And applies right across the board. The problem, though, comes with the fool who despises wisdom and instruction. And here we have what happens to the petit who so badly needs instruction if he refuses to get it. He becomes an avil, a more serious, a more sinister type of fool, the thick-headed fool. This is the type of fool it's not only that he needs instruction, but he's refusing it, absolutely refuses to take it. One lexicon says, thick-headed, stubborn, and stupid, one who mocks when guilty, when you ever catch somebody, you know, in wrongdoing, and they just start to tee off and mock everyone around. He's quarrelsome, licentious, and demands his own way all the time. So you sense a real, there's an arrogance here in the avil. Remember, we're not talking about a mental deficiency here. This is actually a moral deficiency that goes into most of these definitions of the fool. Probably petit is the closest to having, you know, because he's really naive and just doesn't understand things. But this guy, the reason he doesn't understand is because he's refusing to understand. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. See, there's why he won't accept instruction. He's like, I already have it together. I don't need instruction. So there's an arrogance here. It's like, I know. I don't need anyone telling me what to do. And that arrogance, that radical autonomy, refusal to submit, is the mark of the Evil, the thick-headed fool. Obviously, they're not going to improve. Proverbs 27:22, though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. It's the Evil. Pounding, yeah. Well, why would he ever change? There's not likely to be much change if you're not willing to accept instruction, right? If you think you're already in the right all the time, then obviously you're going to keep doing right on doing what you've always done. Well, I mentioned earlier that when we read the Proverbs, we're reading insight that is given to these sages by the Holy Spirit as they contemplate the created order. And so, since we are a part of that created order, and since we are people, created to be what people are, defying the wisdom of the sage is the same as defying the Word of God, the law of God. This is like defying the law of gravity. And so we see a warning right here in chapter 1 at the end. And at this point, he kind of has a personification of Lady Wisdom, who calls out to the simple and the ignorant on the street saying, you should listen to what I have to say to you. And they won't. And so it says, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. Yeah. For the way of the waywardness of the naive will kill them. The complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. So that's kind of a very, you know, black and white picture that's put forward here. You basically either learn to listen and to ponder and to eagerly, you know, this is not a passive posture. He mentions not only the refusal to listen on one hand, but the complacency. So the complacency would be like, you know, whatever, I don't care, not caring about the wisdom of the wise. Which is a form of refusing to listen. It's necessary that we have a positive, active posture, pondering, seeking, discovering, and praying about what we learn here. And then, as he says, we'll live securely and be at ease from the dread of evil. So, this is our premise. This is kind of the punchline of this whole introduction. To be a wise person begins with the fear of the Lord, with knowing God. So, before starting to catalog, you know, things, lists of things, or describe tendencies, or gather as much information as we can, we live in an age that is bathed in information. The amount of information you can, attain today dwarfs what it would. We'd have to go to the library and spend hours to get something, to find out something you can get in a 5-minute search today. And so we've got information overload. We're drowning in information. But how much of that information is really wisdom? There's a difference between knowing tons of details about things and being a wise person. You know, to know those lists. Your knowledge, like the Bible, never gets down on knowledge. To the contrary, it extols it. It says we should get as much knowledge as possible. But even more important than simple knowledge is the wisdom to know what to do with that knowledge, to know how to apply it. And that's your life. The question is, you know, my life, am I living and building a life in accordance with the picture that God discloses in his word? Or am I just fussing around trying to you know, fiddle with details. One way to understand wisdom, it's the big picture, as opposed to just the multitudinous, endless details that make up the world. It's when those details fall into a pattern and you start to see the way things, the created order, the way it's made, is when you start to, it's not too hard then to infer, especially if you have that relationship with God, you know, what he would have you do in light of that pattern. So this is really an important point, especially if you're a newer person here or just an explorer who's come out here to see what's going on. The most important starting point is really a relationship with God. And that's what fearing the Lord means. You know, you can invite God into your life. And Jesus paid a huge price to make it possible for us to do this free of charge as a gift. We can turn to God and say, you know, I feel like that I have a lack in my life. I sense that there's a lack in my life, and I'm never sure what it is. Something missing. I sense that there must be more. You need God in your life. That's what. You were created to be in union with God. And so if we're living out here separated from God, which is the way we come into the world, and the world, that's the default for the whole world, separated from God, we're going to have problems, and there's going to be pain. We need to get together with God at a beginning point. Then, with that knowledge of God from the inside, not speculation from the outside. Think of them trying to describe this student, and, you know, none of them really know him or anything. So that, you know, all their definitions and descriptions, very superficial, very surfacey. That's the way it's always going to be until we know from the inside. And to know from the inside is to know God. So you got to consider. Maybe the reason you've come out here tonight is so that you can invite God into your life. That would be a life-changing event for you. He knows what your intent is because God looks at the heart. You don't even, doesn't even matter what you say. The important thing is to turn to God and to let him know of your intent and desire to know him in a personal way, and he'll answer that prayer. That would be the great beginning point for a study of wisdom. What we're going to do in this study is we're going to take a few sections like this, introduction section, this 1 through 7 is one unit of thought. And there's other places in Proverbs like that where you have a 10 or 12 verse, what they call a pericope, a sequence of thought. We're going to study a few of those, kind of do verse by verse analysis of the points that he's making. Then, another way to consider Proverbs is by theme, because similar themes keep coming up in different sections of the book and in even different authors. So we'll do a few where we kind of gather together a bunch of Proverbs on a particular theme, and that's a good way to consider Proverbs too. I would recommend, if you're going to sit through some of these lectures, start reading Proverbs. And that would be a good idea, frankly, to read this book a couple of times in preparation for trying to apply it more so. And it's one of the easiest and most enjoyable books in the entire Old Testament to read. I mean, you try to read, you know, Chronicles or something, it's just like all these names and places, it's very difficult. Whereas Proverbs, you know, makes perfect sense, I think, to the modern reader, just like it did to the ancient. Well, there you have an intro to Proverbs. I'm going to draw the line there for tonight.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.